Welcome to Dog Training Bites, the show where canine professionals share their key takeaways, big aha moments, and hardest lessons learned from working with dogs. I'm Madison, certified dog trainer and behavior consultant, and dogs are my life. Every day, I get to coach guardians and other trainers into a deeper understanding of canine behavior. But let's face it, sometimes dog training really bites. And that's okay, because when it does, we learn a lot. This podcast is all about sharing the lessons learned from experience, because the stories of when it got tough or when we made a mistake, that's when we learn the lessons worth learning. And it's time we share those with the world. I'll be talking to dog trainers and other pet professionals about times that working with dogs, well, bit. Not literally. Maybe literally. What's most important here on this show, what did they walk away with? What did they learn? How did it shape their approach today? Welcome to Dog Training Bites, the show where pet professionals share personal lessons that you won't find in any textbook. Today, we have someone that I have known for quite a while now, Kendall Calloway. Kendall is an accredited dog trainer and behavior coach and has spent the majority of her career focused on canine wellness, nutrition, and a holistic approach to behavior. She examines various factors like biology, physiology, genetics, environment, emotions, and cognitive considerations through her comprehensive framework. Kendall started her training career with me here in the Philadelphia area, but now serves clients in person in Jackson, Mississippi, and virtually worldwide. Hey, Kendall.
Hey, I almost wore my Delco sweater, to just represent.
Bring it home.
It was two options. I was like, do I do Delco or do we do our golden Wolf Culture apparel? I'll plug Wolf Culture anytime I can.
That's always a good choice.
If you're looking for dog training apparel.
I noticed it right away. It's so good.
It is good.
Well, it's good to see you. We talk frequently enough. This is not, someone that I don't get to talk to often, but I am excited to get to talk to you about a story and a lesson. But first, I know the gal pal, the Powerpuff Girls, but tell the rest of the world about
these guys,
the Muttley crew you got going on back there.
Okay, so right now I have 3 dogs currently, and I say that as right now because I do foster, but we currently have our long-term foster. Her name is Hootie. She's about 6 or 7. She came from the hoarding case Madison and I worked on together, which was about, I want to say 112 was our final count. It was in the hundreds, actually. Yeah. But Hootie was one of the longest residents on the property. I took her home day one, which was May 28th, 2023. She's been with me ever since. And so that's number one. Mm-hmm. Then I have Chloe is our second oldest, who is a cattle dog pit bull mix. She was rehomed to me for some human and dog aggression issues. And her current owners at the time just weren't able to give her the care that she deserved. And so it just really fell on my heart to drive to Tennessee and go pick her up. And she's been with us since 2021.
That started our friendship.
Yeah,
at that
Chloe
point,
started when you our were, friendship.
Yeah, when you were bringing her home, you reached out for, I just need any tips. I'm bringing home this dog from this situation. I don't really know how it's going to go integrating. And we talked through it and you're already in love with the training process, but I feel like that puts you even more firmly down that path.
Oh, it definitely, once you get a dog that has significant behavior concerns, which hers actually weren't as significant as I thought. She just needed a safe place to land. But once you kind of start down that path and I started absorbing information about behavior and all this stuff, it was I had tunnel vision towards it. I was there's no way I can't not go down this, and you can't look back, once you're in it.
It's true. Once you learn it,
active dog, you're done. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's when you get forced into it. Winnie was our first dog, my first dog as an adult human, which, she was she's been the biggest lesson of all, because she was the parvo puppy from the shelter. And that got me into like the nutrition and the wellness and all that. And then she,
because you had to.
And then she, you know, and then she's had her own like adolescent behavior developments and with moving and stuff. So like, she's our little coonhound mix. If any of you guys out there have a coonhound, you know what I'm talking about. Like it is a serious commitment to these dogs that you have to like take them as they are and just love the mess out of them regardless.
And you do. You love the mess out of her.
She's like the forever lesson. Whereas I feel like the fosters and like Chloe have already had like such good monumental progress, but like Winnie is like the forever journey, you know.
She's just ever evolving. That's just who she is.
Yes. But she's great. They're all great. Hootie, you know, obviously is available for adoption if anyone's interested in like a very, she's trained and she's got basic cues and she's got a lot of behavior history with a trainer. So if you're looking for a dog that's just more predictable, like that's why I love adopting adult rescues.
I won't use
like
the word perfect. Perfect dog doesn't exist, but Hootie is great. And whoever she ends up with is going to be so lucky. Yeah.
Well, Madison and I both have talked, like you and I have both talked a lot about like adopting adult rescues is just so much more grounding because you do kind of have, especially if they've been in foster, you have some kind of idea of what their behavior is going to look like. Adopting a puppy, they're like a question mark.
Oh, they're still becoming who they're going to be.
It's going to be like, you know, so it's nice. Like,
you have a lot of influence, I think, and like opportunity to help shape the manners that will fit best into your life. But I think that you're right. You also have no idea what the stages of development are going to do. And when, you know, you have a puppy who's quite sick at the early stages and then maybe goes through, you know, a big move at certain periods of development. Yeah, it can make for a ever evolving journey.
Yeah, I think it's been put on my heart. I'm like, I really think that I would only take a puppy again under like serious rescue circumstances, like they needed. But I highly doubt I will ever go target a puppy again because I've had so much joy.
I feel the same way.
I've just had so much more joy with adult dogs.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. All right, Kendall. Well, I am excited to hear what story you have brought to share with me and the world. I don't even know if this is one that I've heard or not. So I'm kind of here buckled in with the rest of the crew.
Yeah, let's get into it. So I think the biggest story that kind of played into my career that really like sucked me in to, you know, my current trajectory has been the health and wellness aspect of dog training, which I think a lot of people don't have a lot of insight into. So specifically when I moved to Mississippi, I had a case that came to me that they were referred out, and I was a contract employee at the time, and they referred to me for like dog intra-household dog aggression. So that's when two dogs in the same household are having issues or have had, in this case, like really, really high level bite situations where one dog had to be hospitalized and have surgery. So we went from, you know, two dogs that were playing regularly and had a really good dynamic to we're having like severe attacks, right? So then like, you know, getting into like the nitty gritty of it all, and asking the right questions, which luckily, if you have like an intake process that prompts a lot of this stuff, which is why it's so important to have that built into your behavior curriculum, I was able to get out of their guardian that, you know, a year prior, this dog in question that was the aggressor had had a infected uterus surgery.
Wow.
And that ever since then, she has not only felt better after that, but that she had had a lot of health issues since then. You know, so of course, you know, if you've had like any sort of history with like behavior changes and physical health, your little things are going off and you're like, okay, this is a starting point. And then what we were able to figure out is that the dog actually had just like an ongoing infection. And even though the uterus had been removed, there was something still lingering. And then, you know, and that had to be addressed. And who knows? I mean, you could even get into like, is it hormonal? Is it this? Because all of those things that go along with removing a dog's
probably many, many things happening. Yeah, there's, I mean, absolutely. We can't really say it's just one thing because none of those could possibly occur in a vacuum.
Absolutely. So that was like, you know, what really propelled me towards like, oh my gosh, I have all of this knowledge about like nutrition and physiology, and I'm learning all of this stuff about genetics and whatever, but that so many people aren't aware about like the physical state of their dog and how impactful that is on behavior. And then it also, you know, it just kept showing up. Like, I know we were talking about like, you know, teaching a reactive dog group class. So we add a positive improvement in branding.
I don't think that that's a common thing, Kendall. Like, yeah. I don't know anyone else. And I know a lot of like a fair number of trainers, except like probably Denise has done it. I don't know anybody else that has done a group, and I mean like facilitated a group reactivity class. I've spoken to guardians who have been to something like that, but by and large, they were, what I'm being told, were not good experiences. Those guardians did not have good experiences, did not find those to be successful programs. And I know that you've had success with your program, that you've found ways to get growth.
Some people, and you know, and there, so like, I even pulled up my little like protocol that I had written. So basically what we originally started was Christy, who owns a positive improvement in Brandon, Mississippi, asked me to do a loose leash walking class. And I'm going to be honest, you cannot give me a generic prompt like that without me being like, how can I make this work towards stuff I actually care about? Which is, I don't care about loose leash walking, like at all. It's just not something that's in my like foresight, you know, like, do I want a dog to drag me around? No, but I care more about like, what's the function of the behavior behind pulling, right? Like, that's where, so I immediately, my brain went back to like function of the behavior behind pulling. Then you get into like, what are these dogs doing on walks that prompts their owner to, or guardian to think that they need a loose leash walking class? What we ended up with was like a ton of dogs who had frustration-based reactivity, high arousal on walks, some fear, like all those kind of things.
Okay.
And that's basically where I started. And I formatted a whole class off of like everything I had like absorbed from all of these other people. So like the main one was obviously Leslie McDivitt's Control and Leash program. It's phenomenal. And it's all about conditioning and desensitization at a sub-threshold level.
Yep.
So we're like in predictability. It's a very predictability based framework,
patterns, you know,
patterns that stabilize the dog. Then you can, then I pulled from like, you know, I've taken like Amy Cook's management course on Finzi and Dr. Cook, and, you know, pulled from that. And then I had Emma Parsons, like Click to Calm. I like some of that stuff. So I was pulling that in. And then I had like Shikashio's aggression course, pulling some of that in. Like, everything I was, and I was like, how do we make this work? Because at a base level for a course like this, it's really not, how do we go in every week and just have people doing something with their dogs? You know, like, you need to do this exercise and this exercise and this exercise. Really what I wanted to come out of it was like, how can I educate these people in the best way possible about what is actually most likely causing the dog's behavior?
Training them to know what's really happening.
Yeah. And humans, just, you know, introducing them to the concept of management and not corrections, because quite literally the only programs in Mississippi, let me just speak for my area, Central Mississippi, are correction-based programs. So we're talking about suppressing the behavior, right? I was like,
or potentially making it worse by adding in additional punishment.
Potentially making it way worse by fracturing the bond.
You know, the worst thing. And like,
I mean,
we've all been there where we've done things that have broken down our relationship with our dogs. We are so not exempt from that. And we also know, you and I have talked a lot about just how difficult it is to be in a position where you have somebody in a position of supposed authority or expertise in front of you and feeling really uncomfortable or like the approach is not resonating with you, but also not feeling like it is right for you to speak up. We know how hard that is. I've actually been there. even as a trainer, I've been in that position. I know what that feels like. And sure. I actually posted something on Instagram just a couple days ago with a script of like 3 or 4 phrases that people can use to get themselves out of those situations without kind of having to shoulder all the emotional impact of that.
Oh yeah. I think some people, especially if they haven't even had this long, illustrious career, like doing this type of training or whatever, I think it, like, I felt from like just on social media alone that people can be really defensive, you know, and you want to make sure that, you know, as a student or even as a trainer talking to another trainer, that like you come with compassion to every single interaction, because I don't ever want someone to feel like I'm just like destabilizing or demoralizing them because we don't train the same way. But like, I do take issue with like, let's not pretend like that's the only way out there. And like, it's like, do this or else for the dog and the humans, you know? Yeah. And so that was kind of like the mentality of a lot of these people. They might've attended a group class before. They might've came in on e-call. We had people come in on e-callers. We had people come in on prong callers. We had people come in on good dogs and, or good boys or whatever you want to call them. And every single time we had, it wasn't like, let's remove this tool and, you know, scrap everything you've done. It was more of like, let's just start paying attention to like what's actually going on with your dog. So like before they even came to the class, they had to attend like an education session almost without their dogs, where they learned about marker words, no reward markers. They learned about just the concept of pattern games, like what and why, because a lot of people would like, I think if a lot of people saw us doing like 1, 2, 3 and up, down or whatever, like you're just feeding the dog. It looks like that. But when you actually are able to like sit down and explain it and you don't have dogs around and they can just focus on like the information that's being presented, it's just a lot more successful. I talk a lot about body language though. And I think that was where I got the most questions from the guardians, was just telling them like, you know, giving them little handouts of like, I think her name's Sophia Yin. She has all of those like great body language handouts. And I bought all of those and printed them out for everyone. And
yeah, those are so good.
They're so good. And everyone was like, wait, so when my dog does the turn away and the lip lick, or they sniff or whatever, you know, what are they trying to say in that moment? I was like, good question. Like, let's get into it. It's just like having
them get curious. I love it.
Well, they were like, they were already noticing things about their dogs on walks or around, you know, in situations in their house or whatever. They already noticed stuff that their dogs were doing. They just didn't know like how to interpret it yet.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that was a lot of it, honestly. It's like, we just got into that. I got the humans what I felt to be some baseline information. Mm-hmm. And then we would go into the training and like, you know, regardless of the dog or the human, you know, there are dogs that are not going to be candidates for a dog class. And I think like we have to act in integrity in those moments, and we have to be willing to refund people their money or give them another option to work with you, you know, credit it towards private lessons or whatever.
I had to do that a lot when I did instruct group classes, of they show up and you realize it's not the good fit. So you give them their money back and you give them another option if they'd like to move forward.
Yeah. And I think what was really hard for some of the guardians is because they felt like their dog was broken or something. And they felt like, oh my gosh, my dog can't even go to a group class. And I was like, no, your dog cannot learn here. Right. They can learn all of the stuff we're going to learn in this group class, but they cannot learn it in this environment because and a lot of these dogs surprisingly had gone through group classes before and they had struggled the whole time, but they were allowed to graduate group classes despite the dog struggling the whole time. So we already have like a negative association with the room and the space and the instructors or whatever. And so it was really like, I just immediately said, I was like, I will not allow a dog to continue in this process if I think that they're a bite risk, if I think that they're too scared to, you know, eat or play, or just if they can't relax. You know, I had criteria, and you cannot allow people to like walk in there every week and take steps back because we're trying to like keep that financial gain or not lose the business. You know, I'd rather lose their business because I told them that they weren't a candidate for group class than keep them in there and push them back in their relationship. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. So it sounds like it, this whole group class experience not only shifted, I guess, even the main coaching focus from the dogs to the humans, but also gave you a lot of new, I don't know, ways to empathize and use, like lead with compassion, like you said, in the conversations with the humans.
It honestly, I used to have like this horrible relationship with working with people. And I think group classes,
I remember.
I know, group classes will challenge you, right? In a lot of ways. But I think what it actually led me towards is I really, really want to find a way to be the best advocate for people that I possibly can be. And in that regard, they can be the best advocates for their dogs.
You have to have it yourself to be able to give it away. Jerry says that all the time.
You if I cannot empower this person to see that they have it within them, if I cannot positively reinforce this person.
There it is. There it is. The human positive reinforcement.
To succeed in their own, you know, approach, then there is no point of me doing anything with the dog.
Yeah.
Because we've lost a link in the chain.
Yeah, I agree. So Kendall, is there anything else that you would like the people out there, the wonderful dog people listening, to know about you or about how to work with you?
So my biggest thing right now is that I'm really focusing on helping people that are acquiring dogs that have been in rescue environments, shelter environments, or even dogs that are coming into foster. But also, you know, anyone with behavior concerns, obviously, you know, that's my favorite thing to coach. Really, if you're out there and you're like, my dog has a lot of medical issues and they're struggling with their behavior and, you know, I just don't feel like I have any support, we'd probably work really well together because part of like my process is to look at it at a very holistic level and think about the dog from, you know, top to bottom, not just what the behavior is. So if they want to work with me, I usually just do emails, kendall@sentientdog.com. Instagram is Sentient Sparky Dog Training Co. And they can just reach out. And usually if I feel like I can take the case, I'll take it. And if I feel like there's someone better out there suited to them, I'll refer them to that person, because I'm not afraid to like give other people business if it's better suited for them.
Absolutely. All right. Well, you can connect with Kendall on Instagram at Sentient Sparky Dog Training Co. And you can find more information on her training and a link to her website in the show notes. Thanks for joining us in the world of Dog Training Bites, where every challenge brings a lesson worth sinking our teeth into. See you next time. Dog Training Bites was created, produced, and edited by Madison Simpson. You can connect with me on Instagram at Dog Training Bites, that's B-Y-T-E-S, and at Freed by Training. For information on today's guest and resources for help with your dog or dog training education, visit www.dogtrainingbites.stream. Looking for more? Listen to my other show, Unpacked, clinical dog training podcast co-hosted by Sailor Jerry the Dog Trainer and produced by Straight Up Dog Talk, LLC.